भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर भवती नैष्टिकी। श्रीमद् भागवतम सेकंड कैंटो चैप्टर 22 चैप्टर 7 द शेड्यूल्ड इनकार्नेशंस टेक्स्ट 44 टुडे इक्षाकुर ओइला मुचुकंदा विदेहा गाधी रघु अम्बरीशा शगरा गया नाहुषादया मंधात्री अलर्का शतधन्या अनु रंतिदेवा देवाव्रतो बलिर अमूर्तराय दीलिपः। Can have the lights on? Actually, I think the current came back. I saw some lights. Okay. No, it went back again. Went off again. Ikshaku roila muchukanda videha gadhi Roghu ambarisha sagara gayanahu shadaya मंधत्रलर्कर सतधन्यमुरंति देवा देवाव्रतो बलिरमूर्तरयो दिलीपः। इक्षाकुरैल मुचुकंद विदेह गाधी रघं वरीश सगरा गयनाहुषाद मंधत्रलर्क शतधन्ननुरंति देवा देवव्रतो बलिरमूर्तरयो दिलीपः। इक्षाकुरैल मुचुकंद विदेह गाधी रघं वरीश सगरा गयनाहुषाद्या मंधात्री अलर्क शतधन्ननुरंति देवा देवव्रतो बलिरमूर्तरयो दिलीपः। इक्षाकु इक्षाकु ओइला ओइला मुचुकुंद मुचुकुंद विदेहा महाराज जनक गाधी गाधी रघु रघु अम्बरीश अम्बरीश Shagara. Shagar. Goya. Goya. Nahusha. Nahusha. Adya. And so on. Mandhatri. Mandhata. Alarka. Alarka. Shatadhanu. Shatadhanu. Anu. Anu. Rantidevaha. Rantideva. Devarataha. Bhishma. Balihi. Bali. Amurtaraya. Amurtaraya. Dilipaha. Dilip. So these are the name of the illustrious personalities who were considered to be great devotees of the Lord, illustrious devotees of the Lord, narrated by Brahma to Narad Muni. I will read the entire translation of those three verses along with the purport again today. O Narada, although the potencies of the Lord are unknowable and immeasurable, still, because we are all surrendered souls, we know how He acts through Jogamaya potencies. And similarly, the potencies of the Lord are also known to the all-powerful Shiva, the great king of the atheist family, namely Prahlad Maharaj, Shyambhuva Manu, his wife Satarupa, his sons and daughters, like Priyabrata, Uttanapad, Akuti, Devahuti and Prashuti, Prachinabarhi, Ribhu, Anga, the father of Vena, Maharaj Dhruva, Ikshaku, Oila, Muchukunda, Maharaj Janak, Gadhi, Raghu, Ambarish, Shagar, Gayo, Nahush, Mandhata, Alarka, Shatadhanu, Anu, Rantidev, Bhishma, Bali, Amurtaray, Dilip, Shobhari, Utanka, Shibi, Devala, Pippalada, Sarasvata, Uddhava, Parashara, Bhurishena, Bibhishan, Hanuman, Shukadev Goswami, Arjun, Arishtasena, Vidura, Sutadeva, etc. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. All the great devotees of the Lord, as mentioned above, who flourished in the past and present, and all the devotees of the Lord who will come to the future, who will come in the future, are aware of the different potencies of the Lord along with the potency of His name, quality, pastimes, entourage, personality, etc. And how do they know? Certainly, it is not by mental speculation, nor by any attempt, by dint of limited instruments of knowledge. By the limited instruments of knowledge, either the sense or the material instruments like microscope and telescopes, one cannot even fully know the Lord's material potencies which are manifested before our eyes. For example, there are millions and billions of planets far, far beyond the scientist's calculation. But these are only the manifestations of the Lord's material energy. What can the scientists hope to know of the spiritual potency of the Lord by such material efforts? Mental speculations, by adding some dozens of ifs and maybes, cannot aid the advancement of knowledge. On the contrary, such mental speculations will only end in despair by dismissing the case abruptly and declaring the non-existence of God. The sane person, therefore, ceases to speculate on subjects beyond the jurisdiction of his tiny brain. And, as a matter of fact, he tries to learn to surrender unto the Supreme Lord, who alone can lead one to the platform of real knowledge. In the Upanishads, it's clearly said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never be known simply by working very hard and taxing the good brain, nor can He be known simply by mental speculation and jugglery of words. The Lord is knowable only by one who is surrendered soul. Herein Brahmaji, the greatest of all material living beings, acknowledges this truth. Therefore, the fruitless spoiling of energy by pursuing the path of experimental knowledge must be given up. One should gain knowledge by surrendering unto the Lord and by acknowledging the authority of the persons mentioned herein. The Lord is unlimited and, by the grace of the Yogamaya, helps the surrendered soul to know Him proportionately with the advance of one's surrender. So it has been pointed out again and again that the only way one can know the Lord and understand His potencies simply by means of surrender, which is the beginning of devotion to the Lord. The surrender and devotion are interlinked. One cannot be devoted to the Lord without being surrendered. And one cannot surrender to the Lord unless one becomes a devotee. So they are related to each other, they're interlinked. Devotion begins with surrender. And as we develop our devotion, we become more and more surrendered. And these are the illustrious personalities. 43 of them have been mentioned here in this verse, in these three verses. Those who are, although very, very great personalities, many of them were the rulers of the entire earth planet. Entire earth planet. But still they were surrendered to the Lord. They were powerful kings, they were great warriors, they were fearless in the battle, They did not care for anyone, but when it came to the Lord and His devotees, they were just completely surrendered to Him. So that is... That's why these personalities are so illustrious. These personalities are so exemplary. So, yesterday, until when, which personalities did we do? I think we did Priyavrata and Uttanapad and their children. Uttanapad's children who are the children of Uttanapad? And Uttam. Very good. So Uttanapad has been described as a very, very great devotee of the Lord in the category of a Mahajan. These are all actually Mahajans. So the next is Prachina Barhi. King, another very illustrious king, Prachinabarhi, who was very expert in performing sacrifices, and he was quite attached to performing sacrifices. He was very attached to perform and sacrifices, but his sons, those who get involved in this materialistic aspect of the Vedas, known as the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, they are materialistic people. So Prachinabarhi was, although a very powerful king, but he was very materially attached to his fruitive activities in the beginning. But then Narad Muni took pity upon him. How many of you know the anecdote of King Prachinabarhi? How many of you, raise your hands, those who know the anecdotes of King Prachinabarhi? Only two? How many of you have been reading Srimad Bhagavatam? King Prachinabarhi, you don't remember? Okay, make it a point. Anyway, I'll be asking you for about each personality, how many of you know about them. Okay, Ganganaran, who is King Prachinabarhi?
Bhagavata, I forget, but his son is Prachetas. He gave instruction to perform some austerities, they went working for performing some austerities.
Hmm.
When they woke from austerities, they burnt out all this, this for that forest.
Hmm. Okay, very good.
Then they, by pacifying them, Chandradev gave someone, his daughter who is for marriage with them, I don't call it.
Very good, okay. Whose daughter that girl was? He was the girl of the ocean, Shatadruti. Okay, actually in Bhagavatam all these characters are so interesting that we can make a movie out of each personality. Very exciting personalities, very wonderful personalities. Prachinabarhi, so King Prachinabarhi was the father of the Prachetas. The Prachetas became involved in performing austerities and penances. They were actually, they received the benediction of Lord Shiva and the blessings of Narad Muni. Narad Muni personally instructed them and guided them. Actually, Lord Shiva guided them. That you all go to this lake and perform, go under the water and perform austerities. And they started to do that. And when they came out, they found that the whole earth planet has become covered with trees. Because there was no system, there was no law and order. There was no proper king ruling. And as a result of that, the whole earth planet became covered with trees and plants. Anyway, to go back to King Prachinabarhi, when Narad Muni saw that these Prachetas are so much involved in developing their relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the Prachetas, Narad Muni took pity upon their father, King Prachinabarhi. He felt that his sons are so advanced, but look at this character, just completely absorbed in performing sacrifices to acquire punya and have materialistic enjoyment. So Narad Muni came and advised him. What story Narad Muni told him to Prachinabarhi, he advised Prachinabarhi about the importance of spiritual life. In this way, Narad Muni gives advisors to the deserving candidates. When he sees, when he takes pity upon somebody, he just advised and told him about the importance of spiritual life. King Prachinabarhi also was illustrious in another sense. Prachinabarhi got married to Shatadruti. Now Shatadruti was such a beautiful girl, such a beautiful woman, that when she was circumambulating the fire god Agnidev became attracted to her. Even the demigods became attracted to her because of her celestial beauty. And Prachinabarhi got married to this Shatadruti, and Shatadruti he got these 10 sons known as Prachetas. They are exemplary. Prabhupada actually used them as an example of unity and cooperation. They all were committed to just one cause. Whatever they did, they all, 10 of them, were together performing that. And Prabhupada wanted us that in ISKCON we should take that example. In ISKCON we should all become united. The Prachetas were united in a spirit of cooperation. So then next comes Ribhu. Ribhu is the son of Brahma. He is a great sage in the category of the Kumaras who wanders around the universe distributing transcendental knowledge. Like there are these personalities, they are very compassionate, these exalted sages. Often we find that how Narad Muni is traveling around and distributing Krishna consciousness to people. In Srimad Bhagavatam there are so many instances how Narad Muni instructed, gave Krishna consciousness to people like a hunter, Mrigari. Mrigari was a hunter, and not only he was a hunter, he used to take pleasure by torturing the animals. He would kill the animals, he would hunt the animals, but he wouldn't kill them. He would just half kill them. And he would take great pleasure to see that they are suffering in pain, writhing in pain. In pain when they were cry out, in pain when they would cry out and roll and writhe, he would laugh. So that was such a, he was such a cruel person. But Narad Muni took pity upon him. Narad Muni took pity upon him and instructed. And that's how Mrigari became a great devotee. Another such person that Narad Muni bestowed his mercy is, I'm sure everybody knows, is the Dashrur dacoit called Ratnakar. And who became, who is Ratnakar? Yeah, the great sage Mahakavi Valmiki who wrote Ramayana. So in this way, Narad Muni and great sages like Ribhu is one of them, who is son of Brahma, who wanders around the universe distributing his mercy in the form of giving people transcendental knowledge. Anga, next comes Anga. Anga was the son of a great personality called Ulmuka. And Anga was a very powerful king also. And his son was Vena. Although Anga was a great personality, a great Mahajan, a great devotee of the Lord, but Vena, as we know from Srimad Bhagavatam, became a tyrant. He was a completely uncontrollable individual. And Prabhupada mentioned that why? Because although Anga was such an exalted personality, Anga was a great devotee and illustrious king, but his son became a total rascal, a tyrant and defiant, demoniac individual. Prabhupada pointed out, because unfortunately Anga got married to a not so nice woman. The father may be great personality, but if the mother is not, then the children may take to the mother. So Anga, when he saw that his son was like that, so he tried to advise him, guide him, chastise him when he was a little boy. He would take great pleasure killing the animals unnecessarily. See them suffering. He was so tyrannical even as a child. And eventually Anga became so disappointed that he just left home and went away. when he saw that he couldn't train his child, his son, properly, he just left home, took Vanaprastha, and went to the forest. So this is how painful it becomes for the parents when the children become, indisciplined and uncontrollable. On the other hand, when the children become illustrious, when the children become exemplary, then the parents feel proud of such a child. Always the parents take great pride and great due to their attachment to their children. If the children are good, then they feel proud. If the children are not good, then they feel great pain in their hearts. So much so that one can just leave. One leaves his home and goes away. Like, that's what Anga did. And Vena, when he became a king, he became completely tyrannical. Instead of taking care of his subjects, citizens, he was torturing them. He was extracting taxes out of them. And for no rhyme or reason, he would punish them. So the result was so pathetic. People were suffering so much that the sages, the brahmanas, who generally live in the forest, away from the cities and capitals, they heard the cry of the people and they became perturbed. So they came to advise Vena that, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You are actually the representative of the Lord. As a king, you are meant to take care of his land and take care of the inhabitants of that land. As a king, you are the caretaker. But Vena was completely arrogant and defiant. He just didn't want to listen to them. He became so intoxicated with his power that he disregarded these sages, these saintly personalities, and he started to insult them. And still these sages advised him, Vena, please listen to us, try to understand, come to your senses, don't act like this. But Vena was completely arrogant and incorrigible. So then the brahmanas just cursed him. And as a result of their curse, the king, Vena, was dead. Just the curse, and not even cursed actually. What Bhagavatam describes that they uttered the hunkar. They roared out of anger. They didn't curse, they roared out of anger, and just that anger, the anger was so powerful that he was dead, spot dead. But Vena didn't have a child. Vena didn't have a successor to the throne, so they started to consider what to do now. So from Vena's body, from his right arm, churning their right arm, his right arm, a great personality just appeared, that is Prithu Maharaj, who was an incarnation of the Lord. The next is Dhruva Maharaj. How many of you know about Dhruva Maharaj? Good. Maybe you can see how many of... I can't figure out who doesn't know. So maybe you can... It'll be easier to figure out how many of you know about Dhruva Maharaj if I ask you. Please, those who do not know about Dhruva Maharaj, raise your hand. Oh, so everybody knows Dhruva Maharaj. Okay, so maybe I'll ask somebody to tell about Dhruva Maharaj. Who would like to speak about Dhruva Maharaj? Okay, Krishna Balaram, you tell us about Dhruva Maharaj. Oh, Radhika raised her hand. I didn't see that. Okay, Radhika, maybe you can stand up and tell us. Then we can also see you. Don't consult your mother. Tell us about Dhruva Maharaj.
There was a king and he had two wives. And one was young and then the other one. And so really neglected the one other one. And so they both had a child. And one's name was Dhruva. So when Dhruva went to go visit his father, he saw his old brother playing with his father and talking nicely. So he also wanted to sit on his father's lap and play with him. And so he went to his father and must also sit on his lap. And so let she go on. And then his wife came and pulled Dhruva off and said that if he wants to sit on his father's lap, then he must take birth from her. And so he went to his other mother and he said, how could he find happiness? And she told him how he could find happiness by meditating on Vishnu, the forest, because all of the Brahmanas go to the forest and meditate. And so Dhruva left the palace to go and meditate on Vishnu. And so Narada Muni was watching. So Narada Muni came to Dhruva, and Dhruva knew that this was a special person, so he offered his obeisances. And Narada Muni asked, where was he going? He said, I'm going to the forest to meditate on Vishnu. Narada said that forest has a lot of animals, tigers, and big bugs, and it's a really tough place. And Narada was just testing Dhruva, he was really serious. And so Dhruva showed his respect and said that I'm really serious and I want happiness, so I'm meditating, so I'm going to meditate in the forest on Vishnu. So then Narada knew that Dhruva was serious, so Narada told him how to meditate on Vishnu. The orange man and Chantam and all the good things were there. And so Dhruva did it exactly how Narada told him. He meditated and he ate dry leaves and fruit, and then water and just dry leaves, and then he just meditated. And then one day the king was looking for Dhruva, and so he could not find Dhruva anywhere. And then someone told him that Dhruva was in the forest meditating, and the king was very sad, and how could I just neglect my other wife, and now Dhruva has gone to the forest and meditated. But they told him that Dhruva was fine. And so his meditating became so powerful that it was choking the whole world. And they begged to Vishnu to please help him. So Vishnu came to Dhruva, and Dhruva was feeling happy that they could see Vishnu. And so Vishnu asked him, what would you like? And Dhruva said, since now I've seen you, I do not want anything from you. And so Vishnu said that we all suffer something. And he said, I want a planet bigger than my father's. And he said that I cannot give that, but I'll give you a planet of your own that will never be destroyed. So you have got what you want.
Haribo! So, didn't you learn a lot from Radhika today? Thank you, Radhika. Hare Krishna. So, Dhruva Maharaj And next is Ikshaku. Actually, today's verse is starting from Ikshaku. All these other nine personalities have been described in the previous verse, text 43. 44 has quite a few personalities. Let me see how many of them we can cover. So, Ikshaku. How many of you know about Ikshaku? Don't worry, I won't ask you to tell the story like Radhika, unless you want to. How many of you? Don't feel shy, raise your hands. Ikshaku, those of you know of him. Okay, who is Ikshaku? Okay, let us consider where we generally get to know about Ikshaku. Yeah, two sources actually. One is we know that Lord Ramchandra appeared in the Ikshaku dynasty. Don't you know that? Ramchandra appeared in the Ikshaku dynasty, and we get to know also about Ikshaku from Bhagavad Gita. Which verse? How many of you know? What is that verse, Ganga Narayan?
Evam parampara praptam.
No. Yes. How does it start? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Evam parampara praptam imam rajeshaya vidu shakalene yoga. After describing about karma yoga in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is telling to Arjuna that this knowledge, imam vivashyate yogam praktavan aham abhayam. That imang vivashyate yogam. Imang means this knowledge. This knowledge I gave to Vivashvan. Vivashyate yogam praktavan aham abhayam. And Vivashvan manave praho manur ikshakuve abrabit. So Vivashvan is the name of, who is Vivashvan? Imang vivashyate yogam. Vivashan is the name of sun god. Now we see the sun coming up every day. That sun planet is not an empty desert. Sun planet is not just a round little fiery ball or a big fiery ball, big planet. Sun planet is filled with inhabitants. One may say that how can there be people in sun planet? Yes. In sun planet also there are people. Only thing is that people like you won't be able to stay in sun planet. Because your body, our bodies are not meant for sun planet. In order to live in sun planet, we need an appropriate body. Sun planet is a planet of fire. Therefore, in order to live in sun planet, one needs a body made of fire. It's a fiery body. Let us consider what is our body like. Do you know what is our body made of? There are five elements: earth, water, air, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. With what material? What is the predominating element in our body? Yes, right. The predominating element in our body is water. What is the percentage?
78.
It's about 80%. Almost 75 to 80, depending how fat you are. So, our body is made of water. we are living in the planet which is generally Earth. It's an Earth planet, made of Earth element, solid substance. But our body is made of water. And this body is conducive, it's just appropriate to live in this planet. Like we see, say, we may go to, when we go deep down in water, can you live? We may swim on the surface of the water. If you go a few hundred feet down the water, what will happen? The pressure will make the body explode. There's so much pressure, if you go a few hundred feet down the water, don't even have to go a few miles underwater. You go a few hundred feet down the water. Therefore, those who go underwater, what do they do? The divers, they wear proper uniform that would withstand that water pressure. And similarly, you take a fish out of the water and put him on the land, what will happen to the fish? Will the fish be able to survive on the land? No. So this way we can see that there are living entities everywhere. Not only that, only on the surface of the earth there are living entities. From the surface of the earth it seems that there is nothing in the water. But when you go deep into the water, then what do you see? It's full of living entities. The ocean is full of living entities. When you go down the water in a submarine, you will see. Of course, it's dark, but if there's a spotlight, that's what they do. When they take you out to see what's underwater, there are very powerful lights and you see such colorful habitation. Colorful fish, colorful plants, colorful... It's another world altogether, very beautiful. So there are living entities underwater. I'm afraid to tell her to give the Sunday feast. Then she'll distribute all the sweets from the sweet shop. Okay. Anyway, everybody, before you come to the class, make it a point to switch off your mobile phones. Or keep it in silence. Then you can see who is phoning you and you can phone back. Keep it in a silent mode. How does it feel in the middle of the class when something just keeps on, something keeps on, starts playing music? Yes? So, the point is, the sun planet is full of living entities. We may not see them, like even this atmosphere, the air. Okay. So now if we run our hand like this, in the air, do you know how many living entities will touch? How many living entities will touch? Any idea, Kartik? You can't even count, you can't even imagine. So many living entities are there, although we can't see them. There is not a single place in the universe where there is no living entity. Everywhere it's filled with living entities. We may go to the forest. How many living entities are there? The trees and plants and mosses, the creepers, and what to speak to the animals, the birds. Go anywhere, you'll find that there are living entities. So why should the sun planet be empty? There's a saying that if all these planets are empty, then it'll be such a waste of space. Isn't it? Somebody created all this and no one is living there. Does it sound all right? When you build a house, what happens? Do you build a house just to keep it empty, sitting there? So when we consider that all these planets have been created, then we have to understand that they have been created with a purpose. And just as this Earth planet is filled with living entities, all the other planetary systems are also filled with living entities. All the planets in the universe. There's not a single planet that is empty. Just like in the middle of the ocean we may find an island. To us it may appear to be, oh, it's an empty island. But when you go there, what you'll find? There are trees, there are plants, there are insects, there are aquatics, there are animals, there are birds. Won't you find that? So this is how the planet is filled with living entities. All the planets in the universe are filled with living entities. And every planet has a ruler. Every planet has a controller. And the sun planet, who is the controller of the sun planet? Who is the king of the sun planet? Vivashvan. They change. In each manvantar, there are 14 manus in a day of Brahma. And along with the Manu, the whole entourage, the whole system changes. So Manu goes and along with Manu, his people go. And another person becomes a Manu. And then his people become different, and take up different responsibilities of the universe. Who is the king of the heavenly planet this time? Who is the? This is the rule of which Manu? Vaivashvata Manu. Vaivashvata Manu. There are 14 Manus and this is the 7th Manu. So this is like in a day of Brahma there are 14 Manus. So this is the 7th Manu. So that means this is actually the midday. About the midday of Brahma. It's going to be about noontime for Brahma to take a bath and take prasad. And Vaivashvata Manu is the ruler of this manvantar. In this time, and Vaivashvata Manu has his people, his entourage to take care of different departments. Like Indra is the king of the heaven, or there is a particular Indra. Who will be the next Indra? Bali Maharaj. And in this way, the system changes. And this time it is Vivashvan who is the ruler of the sun planet. And his son, Vivashvan's son, is Vaivashvata Manu. He is the Manu for this age, this period. Vaivashvata Manu. And so Vaivashvata Manu's son is Ikshaku. Manur Ikshaku ve abrabit. This knowledge Krishna gave to Vivashvan, Vivashvan gave it to Manu, his son, and Manu gave it to his son Ikshaku. And from Ikshaku came the sun dynasty, Surya Vamsa. The Kshatriyas, there are two lines of Kshatriya dynasties, Surya Vamsa and Chandra Vamsa. And in Surya Vamsa, the sun dynasty Dynasty means this is the family line that is ruling, the ruling kings are ruling in this family. In this way, it's interesting to note that in Japan, they consider that they are coming from sun god. They're the rulers of that nation is considered to be coming from sun god. That's why even the whole land is known as Nippon. Nippon means sun. Do we find some similarity? Don't you find some similarity? That they identify themselves that they're coming from Surya Vamsa. With time, they become so isolated that they forgot the actual origin. If they can track back, then they'll go to Vivashvan. The family line will go to Vivashvan. And then from Vivashvan, Manu. Manu to Ikshaku. So unfortunately, in today's world, they have forgotten, due to lack of information, and due to the influence of time, they forgot the actual heredity. So, the rulers, the Kshatriyas, are coming from sun god, Surya Vamsa, or Chandra Vamsa. Ramchandra appeared in the Surya Vamsa. Therefore, it is said that Ramchandra appeared in Ikshaku Vamsa. Surya Vamsa or Ikshaku Vamsa. Their forefather is Ikshaku. Then Ikshaku, after Ikshaku comes Oila. Oila, this name is actually coming from, this is another dynasty, this is actually the Moon dynasty. Oila, the name Oila comes from Ila. Ila's son is Oila. His actual name was Pururaba. Pururaba is the son, moon god's son. Shomdev's son is Bud. And Bud's son is Pururaba. Bud got married to Ila, and because and his son is this personality Pururava. Pururava was married to Urvashi, the celestial Apsara. And there's a very interesting anecdote mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, how he got married to Urvashi. He fell in love with Urvashi, then they got married. Then Urvashi left, and when Urvashi left, Pururava became mad and he left his kingdom, left everything and started to look for Urvashi. And then finally he came across Urvashi after a long, long time in Kurukshetra. And then Urvashi agreed to meet with him just once a year. She committed that only once a year I'll come and meet you. So, but this person, Oila or Pururava, is also another illustrious devotee of the Lord. Then Muchukunda. Muchukunda is the son of Mandhata. How many of you know about Muchukunda? Okay. Yes. Okay, now I'll ask Navadip. Muchukunda, the...
After fighting with the demons, he was quite tired and he wanted to sleep in the
cave.
And Lord Krishna went and woke him up. with his boon that whoever would disturb his sleep would be destroyed. And Yavanraja was destroyed by this.
Who was destroyed by him?
Yavanraja.
Kalajapana, the king of Javana. Yeah, Muchukunda fought on behalf of the demigods against the demons. Those days, we can see that the kings of some of the kings of the earth planet were so powerful that the demigod will ask them for their help to fight with the demons. So Muchukunda was such a great warrior that he fought against the demons on behalf of the demigods, devas. And after the war, when they won, the demigods wanted him to ask for some boon. Ask for some boon. We are prepared to give you any boon you want. But Muchukunda was so tired, he said, look, all I want now is to sleep. And I want to sleep without interruption, and if anybody wakes me up from my sleep, and if I look at him, then he'll be burnt to ashes. So demigods gave him that boon. Okay, you go and have a good sleep, and if anybody wakes you up, then he'll be burnt to ashes. So, Kalajavana attacked Krishna, attacked Dwarka. And so Krishna actually could not kill Kalajavana. Kalajavana had that benediction that Krishna won't be able to kill him. So Krishna won't kill him, not be able to kill him. Krishna can kill anybody. Just as he is the giver of life to everyone, he can also take the life from anyone. But these are Krishna's pastimes. So Krishna, it seemed that Krishna was afraid of Kalajavana and he was running. So he ran into the mountain cave where Muchukunda was sleeping. And so he just entered into the mountain cave, and it was dark, pitch dark. And chasing after Krishna, Kalajavana just came into the cave and bumped into Muchukunda, who was lying there. And he thought that that was Krishna, so he just kicked him. And Muchukunda woke up. And just as he looked at Kalajavana, Kalajavana was burnt to ashes. Are these fairy tales? Huh? Are these fairy tales?
No.
Nowadays, unfortunately, even in India, people think that they are fairy tales. They call it mythology. And that's the greatest misfortune of India today. That these informations that give us a very clear understanding of the spiritual reality is considered to be myth, considered to be unreal stories. They never happened. But no, the scriptures, every single word of the scripture is the truth and nothing but the truth. Then next is Janak, the king of Mithila. He has been described here as I think Mithi.
Videha.
Huh? Videha, right. Yeah. Videha. Videha was his kingdom, which is also known as Mithila. So King Janak, how many of you know about King Janak, Maharaj Janak? Very good. Maharaj Janak is the father of Sita Devi. Therefore, the name of Sita Devi is Janaki. Janak was a great self-realized soul, a devout, great devotee of the Lord. Therefore, Lakshmi Devi, Sita Devi, appeared to him as his daughter. And in course of time, Janak offered Sita Devi to Lord Ramchandra. Actually, Janak was plowing the land to perform, to create the altar for the sacrifice. And then he came across this little girl that came out of the land in a celestial basket. So that's why her name became Sita. Sita means the tip of the plow is called Sita. Then Gadhi. Gadhi is another illustrious king. Gadhi is the father of Vishwamitra. And another interesting aspect is Gadhi had a daughter called Satyavati, and Satyavati was given in marriage to Richikamuni, and their son, Richikamuni, and Satyavati's son was Parashuram. So we see these two personalities were quite illustrious. Like, in a way, like Vishwamitra, he was a Kshatriya, but he wanted to be a Brahmana. But Parashuram was the Brahmana who actually developed the qualities of a Kshatriya. This also was because there was a mix-up. Satyavati and Gadhi's, King Gadhi's wife, so mother and daughter, they were, Satyavati was married to Richikmuni, a Brahmana, and like a sacrifice was performed, and there were two pots of sweet rice were meant for two personalities, two of them, mother and daughter. But it got mixed up. The mother drank, the mother ate the sweet rice that was meant for the daughter, and the daughter ate the sweet rice that was meant for the mother. And as a result of that, the children were born with diverse characteristics. The one who was supposed to be born as the queen's son, the son of Gadhi, he took the Gadhi's son took the characteristics of a Brahmana. And Richikmuni's and Satyavati's son, who was supposed to be Brahmana, developed the characteristic of a Kshatriya. So Vishwamitra, a very powerful king, he wanted to become a Brahmana. And he did become a Brahmana. And Parashuram, born in as a son of a Brahmana, but developed the quality of a Kshatriya. Of course, Parashuram was an incarnation of the Lord who came to annihilate the Kshatriya 21 times. He made the earth Nikshatriya, devoid of Kshatriyas, 21 times. Because at that time the Kshatriyas became so tyrannical, so degraded, that he wanted to wipe out the Kshatriyas. And it all started due to the conflict between Richikmuni and Kartavirjarjun. Kartavirjarjun's sons came and killed his father, Richikmuni. Therefore, Parashuram just became so angry. He was not at home at that time. So he just wiped out the entire family. And not only once, he saw that the Kshatriyas had become so degraded, he decided to wipe out the Kshatriyas. And he did that 21 times. Wiped out all the Kshatriyas from the surface of the earth. Not all the Kshatriyas, some Kshatriyas fled. Prabhupada pointed out that Kshatriyas who fled away from India at that time settled down in Greece and Rome and all that part of Europe. And then from there they later on migrated to the northern, central and northern Europe. First they went and settled down in Greece and Rome. And it's the Romans who actually invaded later on and drove away the barbarians and Saxons from the northern part. And there are all those inhabitants, the original inhabitants of that place were practically defeated by them and they took over. So that's how we see. Originally, the Europeans are actually coming from the Kshatriya line, from India. Then Raghu, then the personality who had been described is Raghu. Raghu appeared in the Ikshaku dynasty. Now here's an interesting thing to note, that if they were fairy tales, if they were myth, if they were unreal stories, then how can we get such a distinct lineage? Not only the father, generations after generations, the line has been very clearly described. Like we know about Ikshaku, but now we are coming to some great personality in the Ikshaku dynasty, Raghu. Lord Ramchandra appeared in this family as his descendant. Therefore, Ramchandra is known as Raghava, Rama Raghava, Raghubir, Raghupati, Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram. So because he appeared in the Raghu dynasty, and the clear line is there, it's coming from Ikshaku, in the Ikshaku dynasty. In the Ikshaku dynasty, there is a king called Raghu. Is it fairy tale or it's history? Isn't it more of a history than anything else? The family line is very clearly defined. Then Raghu's... So in the Ikshaku dynasty, there was a very famous king called Khattanga. Khattanga's son was Dirghabahu. Dirghabahu's son is Raghu. Raghu's son is Aja. Aja's son is Dasarath. Dasarath's son is Ramchandra. And then is King Ambarish. How many of you know about King Ambarish? Maharaj Ambarish. Very good. Ambarish was the son of Nabhaga, another illustrious king, and Ambarish became famous to us at least, from Srimad Bhagavatam because of his conflict with Durvasa Muni. Durvasa cursed Ambarish. Durvasa is famous for cursing. Even the Pandavas were afraid of Durvasa because they were afraid that he could curse him, and Duryodhan actually sent Durvasa to the Pandavas when they were in the forest. And Duryodhan provoked that, yes, you go to the forest and Pandavas are there and they'll take care of you very nicely. And Durvasa used to travel with 64,000 disciples. So then Duryodhan thought that he will go there and he will not be treated properly. He'll come with so many of his disciples and they won't be able to feed them. And then Durvasa will get angry and he'll curse the Pandavas. But when Krishna is there, there is nothing to worry about. And also Duryodhan told, he knew that Draupadi actually had a pot that she received from sun god, that would supply unlimited amount of food until she herself ate. But when she would eat, then for that day, that pot won't produce anything. So Durvasa arrived when Draupadi took her lunch after feeding the Pandavas. And then Draupadi was in difficulty. Pandavas were quite worried, now what will happen? So Draupadi then took shelter of Krishna. And Draupadi had one advantage. She was such a great devotee of Krishna that whenever she remembered Krishna, Krishna would come to her. So Krishna came. He said, "Draupadi, why are you calling me?" And Draupadi said, "Look, Durvasa appeared with 64,000 disciples and I already have eaten, and this pot is not going to produce any food, so why are we in a big fix?" Krishna says, "Is there anything left in that pot?" He said, "No, nothing. We've polished everything off." Then he asked, "Is there at least, see if there is even a piece of grain?" And Draupadi found that there was one piece of grain sticking onto the pot. "Krishna, give it to me." So Krishna took that and Krishna belched of satisfaction. And and in the meantime, Durvasa was taking bath in the river. Pandavas told them, "Please go take your bath and come back. We'll make some arrangements for you." And when Durvasa was taking the bath and came out of the bath, and because Krishna belched, he also started to belch along with all his disciples. They felt so satisfied, so full in their stomach, they felt bad that, oh, they will make such a huge arrangement for us to feed us there, and if we go and can't eat, then it will be embarrassing. Better we go away from here. So they didn't come back. Durvasa, along with his disciples, just went away from there. So this is how Durvasa was afraid of his curse. Everyone was afraid. And it was actually Durvasa who cursed Shakuntala also. That about whom you are thinking, and you didn't recognize my arrival here. And although I was here and I was calling and you didn't see me, you didn't respond to me, I curse the personality who you are thinking of, he'll forget you. He will not remember you. And as a result of that, Dushyanta didn't recognize, completely forgot about Shakuntala. So this is how powerful the sages were. But from the anecdote of Ambarish Maharaj, what do we find? No matter how powerful these personalities are, they should not better fool around with the devotees. Durvasa came and cursed Ambarish Maharaj. And as a result of that, what happened? The devotees are protected by the Sudarshan Chakra of the Lord. And when he cursed, the Sudarshan chased Durvasa. And Durvasa was running, trying to run away. But wherever he was going, he was a mystic yogi. He could travel with the speed of the mind. But Sudarshan was chasing him wherever he went. He took shelter of every great personality. Finally he went to Narayan in Vaikuntha. Said, "Please save me from this Sudarshan Chakra of yours." Narayan said, "Look, I can't save you. If the devotee who you caused the committed the offense to, if he forgives you, then my chakra will stop. Then only you can be saved from my chakra." So Durvasa went back and fell at the feet of Ambarish Maharaj, begging forgiveness. But Ambarish Maharaj, with a natural Vaishnav compassion and generosity, he said, "Offense? No, there is no offense at all. You didn't do anything to me. Whatever you have done is right. You are my guest and I should have actually treated you first. But it was the day of Dwadasi in Vrindavan. Ambarish Maharaj was performed, he performed Ekadasi and he was about to break his fast. And his advisors, his ministers advised him that please break your fast, don't eat anything, just take a little water to drink. And right at that time Durvasa appeared and said that you, when I as your guest haven't been fed and you are indulging in drinking water. So he wanted to curse him. But the result of the curse was he became attacked by the chakra. So this is how illustrious these personalities are, and from these anecdotes we get to know how the Lord bestows His causeless mercy upon His devotees, how the Lord always protects His devotees. Therefore, time and time again it has been reminded in the scriptures that if you take shelter of Krishna, you won't have to worry about anything. Take shelter of Krishna, Krishna will give you all protection. Krishna Himself is saying in Bhagavad Gita, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Ishami. I shall deliver you from all your sinful reactions. Don't worry. The difficulties come due to sinful reactions. So when Krishna takes care of a sinful reaction, there won't be any difficulty. Rather, those who try to cause disturbance and difficulties to a devotee, he becomes affected by that. Nothing actually can affect a devotee. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.